welcome back to Starting to Scale with Emmy Faust. Today I have a fantastic interview with Celine Yiggy Batsy Ducker, who set up a business called Goodstead, which is a social environmental platform, and she is really inspiring. She managed to secure funding during lockdown, and I absolutely loved this interview because it reminded me that if you're really passionate about what you're doing and you truly believe in what you're doing and you work really hard, you will succeed even, you know, despite really challenging conditions. Celine and I met each other a while ago. I can't remember exactly when, but it was about a month before she secured her investment. We got matched together at a sort of networking event. And we talked about keeping in touch. And just a month later, I think it was about a month later, she emailed me to say she'd secured investment. And I was just blown away that she'd managed to do that slap bang in the middle of this global pandemic. And not only was she able to raise the SEIS investment that she wanted, she actually ended up securing £225,000 in March of this year. So have a listen to this interview. It's really fantastic. Celine shares her story with us. She talks about her investment journey and how she connected with potential investors, and also we talk about the power of the advisors and the people that helped her to grow her business and to secure investment, and the pivotal role that advisors and strategic and board members and things like that can play in an early stage startup. I really hope you enjoy this episode.
Thank you, Emmy, for the introduction. It was so nice to meet you at the Hub.Dot event, and I'm so glad to be on this podcast sharing my story with you. So Goodstead is a platform for collaborating on social environmental impact, and it's an easy way to volunteer skills and expertise to progress exciting and impactful initiatives and organizations. And essentially, the mission is to give everyone a chance to use their talent to progress the UN Sustainable Development Goals for 2030, while meeting like-minded individuals, gaining new experiences. So it's more than your traditional volunteering as you know it.
Yeah, amazing. And so how does it work? Is are you connecting people that want to volunteer with organizations that need, or charities that need them, or you're doing that through corporations as well, isn't it? Through corporates that you're...
Yeah, so... it became gradually throughout the past 2 years, the platform became a kind of a multi-stakeholder marketplace. So we have individuals, initiatives, so just projects or organizations like charities, social enterprises, companies, as well as communities. So, and I can get into this more a bit later, but what we do is have a marketplace, and then we have also a second offer, which is a software as a service platform, where we can give more of an exclusive kind of private branded platform to large organizations who want their own private ecosystem, and then also connect to the larger ecosystem. But in the marketplace, we can either match individuals with opportunities for volunteering, or we can enable companies to run employee volunteering programs and have an easy way to find opportunities for their employees and report on impact. And the third bit is we can enable communities who have both sides to use the platform for the management of the collaboration. So we don't only say we do matchmaking only us, we can enable other communities to do their own matchmaking through the platform as well.
That's fantastic. And I think so many people want to use some of their time or their expertise or their skill set to help others, but it's not always easy to necessarily find the right fit or to know how to go about that. I know even for myself, I was wanting to do some sort of mentoring for some, you know, growing businesses, but I actually didn't know how to go around finding the right people. So I suppose what you're saying is you're connecting people that want to help with people that need help. And that's amazing. So why did you decide to raise money? Presumably it was much, because it's a tech platform, presumably it was much needed to sort of grow the business.
Yeah, so it was, I started working on the idea at the end of 2017. So actually throughout 2018, it was the year of obviously learning about and working on the idea, realizing that there was a business opportunity, piloting, finding a tech team at the end of 2018, then 2019, developing something. So I didn't actually decide to raise money until I was really sure that there was a opportunity, business opportunity that was worth taking external investment for. So by that time, I had already invested the money, all the money I had, actually, because I really believed in the idea. And I had a lot of hitting good milestones and a lot of good feedback around the concept and first clients interested. And after that, I felt confident to take the next leap and raise external funding. And I started searching for funding at the end of 2019. It was like 2020, January. I had written a pitch deck, so I was like starting my pitches. And I actually had the first interest from an investor back in 2018 when I won an award for the Top Next Gen Entrepreneur Award from a family business network or global organization. And that generated the first interest of from an investor. So we actually continued those relationship throughout the years. And they also came into this round, which was really good and emotional because, yeah, I knew them from the beginning. But I would say that in 2020, when I started the real push for trying to raise funding, at that time, I actually had run out of my own funds. And it was either raise money or get a loan or, you know, I didn't know kind of how to progress if I didn't raise money. I was searching through angel investment networks. I got accepted to the Seed Tribe platform.
Can you explain a bit more about that, the Seed Tribe platform?
Yeah, so Seed Tribe platform is for impact startups to connect with angel investors as part of Angel Investment Network. So I had got accepted to that one, and then I got accepted to a few different accelerators. So I was kind of growing my network and kind of getting to know many different types of individuals from different networks who have access to investors. So it was like taking one step further. And then what happened was I received a LinkedIn message. And this was when the COVID kicked off, actually. It was March. It was kicking off. No one knew what was going to happen. And then I received that message from an accelerator, someone who was running an accelerator, part of JC Deco. It was called Nurture. And he was giving me some information about this, the accelerator. And we just started talking about the accelerator. And then he wanted to see how we were doing, raising investment, etc. So I've sent my pitch deck to him saying if he has any contacts, I would love to, you know, him to pass on. Everyone says I'll pass on your pitch deck to people. So I was like, okay, I didn't, you know, obviously have any high hopes. But what happened was a week later, I received an email saying we have a few interested investors. There's this one investment fund, Mariana Investments, who want to speak to you. Like, wow. Oh, great, amazing. And then I had the first chat and it went so well. It was like the greatest chat of throughout the history of Good Stead. It was like, yeah, anyways, you know when it goes well, right?
And yeah.
And then in the end, they said we're really interested. And it was right at the end of tax year. So and I was trying to raise SEIS investment. And then 3 days later, they said they have a board meeting where they're going to discuss and give a decision. And after 3 days, I received the news saying they're very interested. They want to do this and they want to invest the full 150K.
Amazing.
Which was like, wow.
So what happened to the the investors that you, the guy that you met in 2018, did he still come on board?
Yes. So then what happened was my target was 150K for 10%. So 1.35 million valuation. I was already getting, they already wanted to come in. I had a few other like small angel investors who said, had said yes, but I hadn't yet reached 150. I was around like 40 or 50K by that time. And then when they said they want 150K, then I had, and I had no SCIS investment by then. So I said, okay, yeah, I'll give you the full 150K SCIS and then I'll take non-SCIS on top of it. So after that, I ended up raising, I closed at 225K actually.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So after that, more angel investors got interested from Turkey as well. And the other family, the family business who got interested in to start with were from Finland. So I have now investors from UK, Finland and Turkey.
Brilliant. And what percentage did you end up giving away in the business?
So it was from the same valuation, 1.35. And then I raised 225K. So a bit lower than 15%, I think now.
Yeah. And do any of them sit on your board, or is it who sits on the board of directors?
So what happened is the investors, the largest investor came on board as an observer. And then also the investors from Finland, one of them came on board as an observer. And then we have two non-executive directors and myself as the chairperson.
So how did you find the other non-exec directors?
One of them is Duygu. She's been our advisor from kind of the very early stages. She's actually part of Hub.network network as well.
I think I met her. Is that the lady that introduced us?
Yes.
She was exactly. Like, I've got someone for you to meet. And it was like, wow, this is just such a great connection.
Yeah, so she's one of them. And then the second one is Ben Legg. He's a seasoned CEO who worked in many different global companies like Google and other companies.
I think that's really interesting and it's fantastic. So one of the things I talk a lot about with my clients and on the podcast, and I've kind of covered this off with quite a few different people I've interviewed, from lawyers to recruitment people, but all dealing in this sort of scaling space, is a lot of startups who want to scale up, it's just them on their own and they don't have a board. And I really believe in the power of non-exec directors and having a diverse board, because I think it brings so much value to the business, both to investors, but also to the founder, the support, because it's lonely running a business on your own,
yeah,
to have the expertise of other people. And I'm really keen to explore that topic a bit further. What do you find, you know, what help have they given you? What's been great about having those people on your board rather than it just being yourself?
Yeah, I would say, even to start with, before I had onboarded non-executive directors, I had a lot of advisors. So if you check our website, you'll see kind of more than 11, 15 kind of advisors, because and these advisors actually joined us through our journey, and we always have kind of either monthly, weekly or quarterly chats with each of them, and everyone contributed in many different ways, in kind, actually, you know, from their hearts, because they were interested in the idea and the vision. And I would say both non-exec directors and advisors, the way they contributed, so they can help with financial forecasting, introducing you to different types of individuals who may open up to opportunities for, you know, investment and clients and sales, also from their own mentor, you know, expertise to help you in your journey by mentoring you.
That's amazing that you had. So I remember when you sent me the pitch deck, and I did actually send it on to someone I know. But when you sent that through to me, I remember thinking, wow, you've got this amazing team of advisors. So I think that also is such a great sign to investors that these people want to put their time and energy and name to a business. So how did you go about finding the advisors?
Yeah, I would say, so how that happened was, for example, our very first advisor came on board back in 2018 when I first had the idea. I was working on it. He's called Ruben Campos, and he is a tech professional, basically. He's a CTO in another startup, and he was really passionate about the idea. And he was the first person who helped me think through the whole technical infrastructure, because I'm not a tech person. My background's in business and marketing. I've had my master's thinking about platform design and user experience, and I've had experience doing that through the master's degree, but I don't have years of experience building a tech platform, right? So I would say throughout the journey, I came across individuals. I got introduced to some individuals from my network who got interested and then ended up advising me on different types of subjects. And then they became advisors. So I didn't say, please be my advisor. It just ended up
That's so nice. And I think it's really valuable. And one of the main things that I speak to founders and they're struggling with is the lack of support and the loneliness, and it's overwhelming being on your own.
One more thing that I can say is that the value of joining accelerators and incubators, because that's opens up a whole support network. A few of our advisors actually came through that. We have been in WE in Social Tech, a woman tech accelerator run by Deutsche Bank and NWES. And the other one is EY Foundation's accelerator. And yeah, we had amazing mentors and advisors through that as well. So that's always a good opportunity.
So how did you get onto the accelerators? Is that a difficult process?
So I have applied to quite a few, actually. So you apply through to the cohort through an application form. And then some accelerators have an interview process, some don't. And you just get selected through thousands who get, who apply. It doesn't have, you know, I didn't get accepted to a couple which I have applied to, but then, yeah, sometimes you get accepted. I wouldn't say.
And that's a really good supportive network of what other founders and also mentors and people that can help you.
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing is to meet other founders and attending these sessions where you learn about different types of topics around, you know, starting and scaling your business. However, more than the sessions that you attend to, it's the network you build through meeting other founders and hearing their stories. And then, yeah, the mentors you get into.
Yeah, I think that's so important to have a strong support network as you're growing your business, so that you don't feel like you're on your own and you can connect with other people that are going through the same thing. So it sounds to me like the process was pretty quick, because you said they wanted to get it all done before the end of the year. The deal was done. You got the money in the bank. What are you going to spend your money on?
Yes. So actually, we raised 150K and then we ended up topping up. And one more thing I can mention is the Seed Legals platform.
Yes, I love Seed Legals.
Yeah, it was so
amazing.
Helpful.
Yeah.
I didn't use any lawyers in this round as it's a seed round, but Seed Legals have been really, really helpful. And we did the top-up investment after the 150. We closed at 170K and then we did top-up after that. And to your question of where we're spending the money on, we're hiring our community and partnerships lead, who've been with us since January on a freelance basis. So we now, together with me, we're going to have two full-time employees in the business for the first time. But we have a full-time development team, but they're on a consulting basis. Where we hired another kind of COO, product manager, two times a week. We're investing a lot of our money on the product development, because we want to achieve the product that kind of satisfies the large organizations we work with fully. And so that's why we care a lot about the software we're building. Obviously, community is important too, but we want to get the software right as well. So that's one of the things we're investing the money on. And the other thing is on marketing and building our sales funnel.
So with the product, will you need any more money to build the product, or is what you've got going to be enough to create what you need?
Yep. So we already had a beta version by the time we got the funding. So we had basically all the building blocks and the platform was already working. Now we have about 700 users and 50 challenges now open on the platform, already matching with volunteers. So it's already working basically. Brilliant. throughout the campaign we're running at the moment called Tackle COVID-19, which is great. But so in the next couple of months, we're going to be building the software as a service version up more, and this funding will be enough for that. So by next year, actually, when we raise the next round of funding, we will have a ready kind of product that we're confident with, that which we can scale into the other countries. So now we're at the beta phase, and as we're piloting, we're going to be kind of ready and confident with the products later on. And by July, actually, we're launching the software as a service version for the beta version with a large client. So they're going to be the first ones to basically use it for 2,000 of their employees. And they have 90,000 customers, which they want to use the platform for to manage volunteering. So let's see how all of that goes. Yeah, that's going to be
amazing. So how are you going to get the... you know, your big corporates using the platform? Do you think, are you hoping they're going to come to you, or what is that sales process? How easy is it to get people on board? Because it sounds like such a great opportunity for businesses that you think they'd kind of be knocking your door down.
Yeah, we are working with our first three clients. Actually, one of them is a small agency. The other one is a county council. And the third one is this large company. So we now have these three different types of case studies, which we can create as a result of the process. And we already have a few contacts, which we're speaking to in some large corporates. So the aim is to prove that our platform works the way we say it's going to work, by the end of August or, you know, beginning of August, have a demo to go and pitch, and then deliver on all the key points and requirements that they would like us to deliver, and then do a pilot with a company. And then if they're happy, we continue. So I think one advice I can give to other founders would be, in this process, don't think you need to prepare yourself like in the best condition before you go, you know, talk to clients. I think it's really important to find the potential clients and just open up a conversation saying, oh, I would like to just get your opinion about this. You know, I'm doing a research on a new idea I have, and I just want to see, what you think. Don't tell your idea, though, because it would be better to ask questions. There's this mom's test book. Yeah, it says don't tell your idea and expect people to say, oh, it's a very nice idea, because you won't get the right, you know, feedback.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that you said that, actually, because I was talking to a client yesterday about something that she wanted to launch, and we were talking about potential strategic partners and things like that, or potential investors. And I said exactly that. You don't have to have a fully fledged product offering launch. You just go and a lot of them are kind of friends or contacts or people that she's like, not, you know, connected with. And everyone's supportive, aren't they? People exactly. are interested in giving feedback. They're interested in helping people if you've got a good relationship with them. And I think, as you said, you can get lots of feedback and information, and I think sometimes it's very easy to think it has to be perfect before you go and approach people or before you go and do anything, but actually it doesn't, because if you wait for it to be perfect, it will probably never get live.
Exactly. So we started talking to all these big companies before we were even ready, but then that nurtures a relationship that, you know, here we heard what they actually wanted, what their pain points were, so we got a chance to develop
platform. So important. Result. Exactly. Yeah. Develop something that's needed, that people want, not what you think they want. And that's really important to do the research. And I think just, we're going to finish now, but just one last thing I wanted to mention is, you were talking about the power of networking and building connections, which you were doing right from the start, way before, you know, you even were thinking about closing that investment round. Yeah. Just very quickly, I'd love to hear your thoughts on why that has been such a key part of your journey, this kind of building up of networks.
Yeah, definitely. I think the power of kind of meeting people and connections, like, everyone has a potential to introduce you to at least 5 to 7 people, and then those can introduce you to more people. So I would say from the very beginning, never say, oh, it's a waste of time, like, I'll speak to that person later. Or, you know, sometimes you can say no to speaking to someone because you don't think it's necessary at this point, but you never know who's going to introduce you to who. I could have said, like, oh, I don't have time to respond to that LinkedIn message. And if I'd said that, I wouldn't have got the investment that I have now, kind of thing. So always take the opportunity.
It's such a lovely, inspiring story. You're doing great things. You got investment in the middle of coronavirus, which is a massive achievement. And I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your story with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
That is it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Do subscribe. Obviously, feel free to leave me a review. That would be fantastic. But more importantly, do get in touch and let me know if this episode resonated with you, if there's anything that you want me to cover off, if there are any topics that you would like help with. You can connect with me at emmyfowles.com. If you want my free resource to help you scale and grow a profitable business, go to emmyfowles.com/free and do come and find me on social media and say hi. And all that's left to say is, have a great week, and I will be back next week with another episode of Starting to Scale.